Let's go to Shir HaShirim, Songs of Solomon. Shir means a song. HaShirim means of songs. Shir HaShirim, the song of songs. You read in Kings, somewhere you will read that, that, okay, we ready?
Mm-hmm.
If you read in Kings, you will read, I don't know where the verse is right now, you will read that Solomon wrote 1,000 songs, 1,050 I think the number is. And that being said, this is his number one hit. Now, I think that this song was used as a, how can we say it, like a play. So when you would go for entertainment back in Solomon's time, what they would do is have like a, not necessarily an amphitheater, but they would have an open space where what they would do is they would, you know, just put on sort of plays of a sort. And I believe that this song was used in that fashion. And so they would have had some sort of ornate place to present the song in a way that is like our having a play or something like that today. You know, you might see like a school play or something like that. So this is most likely how it was originally presented, but it's a love story. And obviously everybody knows how that goes. If you got a love story, everybody loves a love story. And so this is really probably out of all of the biblical texts, this is one of the most mystical and spiritual parts of the whole Bible. And it's taken in a sense that it is picturing God as the lover, and the beloved in this case is Israel. And so it's understood to be, you know, a love song to Israel, so that everybody can basically understand its content. You know, my favorite verse in all of the Bible is Songs of Solomon 1 and 4. And the Shulamite maiden, she says, draw me, we'll run after you, or we'll chase you. And that's always been, you know, my heart's cry to God, to say, you know, draw me, and I will run after you, or I will seek you, or whatever, okay? So in Shir HaShirim chapter 2, verse 9, said, my beloved is like a roe, which is like a deer, or a young hart. Both are pictures of deer. And it said, behold, he stands behind the wall, or our wall. He gazes through the windows, and he peers through the lattice. Now, I ordered that in a way that it's actually faithful to the way that it reads in the Hebrew text. If you're reading an like a New King James or something like that, it'll say that he's gazing through the lattice, but it does not say gazing. It uses a word that literally the basis for the word is to blossom. But that means the beginnings, and it means to actually be peeping, okay? And peeping is, you know, an aspect of a vision, spiritual vision. Now let's go to 1 Corinthians. We'll go all the way to 12 if we want. And he basically says here, he said, but now we know in part, and we prophesy in part. And so this shows you that there, as Elizabeth will tell you, or if she's already told you, that there are many different levels of prophecy.
11.
And there's also, in the same respect, many aspects of spiritual vision or spiritual ocularity. When I say spiritual ocularity, it kind of takes it out of the sense of it being just vision. It takes it or puts it in the place where that you're actually looking into the spiritual world. So when we begin to understand what it's like to look into the spiritual world, we kind of need a little bit of geography to know where we're at. So that's part of the reason why I gave you the, this is Isaiah, the world we live in. This is Yetzirah, and of course, Berea. And I'll talk a little bit about how you appropriate vision in those particular worlds. Because the more you study it, the more you learn what it means, the more you understand what you will see when you look into those realms. Most people really do not know what they're looking at when they try to, quote, see into the spiritual world. And they do not understand that there are differences of perspective once you look in those spiritual worlds. And sometimes when they've been seeing things in the spiritual world, they come back and they're confused. And the confusion is because they don't know what they're looking at. They don't know what world they're at. They don't know any of the details about how spiritual ocularity or spiritual vision works. And so you have this difficulty of understanding what you're going to look at when you look in the particular world. So in the three worlds that I gave you, there's of course five altogether, but I just did these because number one, I want you to see that the first of all, the realm of Yetzirah, which is the spiritual world, you can see how it overlaps our world. But also, it's positioned sort of strategically so that you understand that to really taste or see into the spiritual world, you're not on the bottom level. You have to climb the spiritual levels in order to get there. Actually, some of the other drawings I've given you show you this, the seven worlds that are in Isaiah, and that in order to truly gain spirituality, you need to elevate into those particular realms. Okay, now in Isaiah, if you looked at that picture, you'll see that basically everything from two-thirds of the way down is absolute Isaiah. So in other words, that means that there is no in-depth spirituality in the lower part of the world, okay? And we're talking spiritually, we're not talking about anything else. So it stands to reason that when you engage the outside world, that you're not dealing with spirituality. You're dealing with everything but spirituality. But then people who have what we'll just call an elevated consciousness, they realize that there is something higher than just physicality, and they realize that, you know, God does exist. Then the next stage after knowing that he does exist is to try to have a connection with him. And then once you've had a connection with him, that's all it takes. That taste of the divine presence is addictive. And when you taste it, all you want is more of it. I want more of God. And it takes a long time for some people to, you know, attach to that. But at the same time, it still takes endurance. If you do not endure, and then Yeshua said it plainly, and, you know, this gets people upset, but he said, only those that endure to the end will be saved. Okay, So when we're talking about, you know, the different realms, you're talking about different aspects. Now, back to Shir HaShirim, where what she is saying is, she said, number one, he's like a young deer. And like a young deer, he stands, it says, behind our wall. So if you want to apply this verse to this illustration, you would apply the wall to the lower realm. Okay, everybody understand? Okay, the wall is what? It's a wall. And generally speaking, you don't see through a wall. Okay, now walled cities in the past were walled for the sense of protection. But, you know, when you start to look outside and you want to see beyond the wall, you have to literally get on top of the wall and look over the wall into the distance to see what you're looking for. So you understand? You don't see, when you're living everyday life, you don't see over the wall. So when you are elevated spiritually, or you have an elevated sense of consciousness, then you look over the wall. And once you look over the wall, then you have, you know, better vision. You can see things in the distance, etc. But there are two other aspects here. Number one is the lattice, peering through the lattice. And then that would be Yetzirah. And then to be able to look through the window would be able to look into Birya. Everybody understand what I'm saying? Okay, it's not definitive yet, so, you know, just so you know the mechanics, okay? The lattice is Yetzirah, and Birya is the world above that world. But if you were to take a compass and draw a line on this picture, you know, do it at the center of Isaiah, and then draw the full circle, you would see that the circle of Isaiah almost touches the circle of Birya as it would overlap. Everybody understand what I'm saying? Okay, so that overlap will bring it to almost touch Birya. The reason it's done this way, the reason I made it this way, is so that you can understand that there is access to these upper realms. Okay, it is limited to those who really want to work on themselves spiritually in order to do it. But the prophets, by and large, lived in the second world of Yetzirah. So they looked there, and I always kid and say they looked into tomorrow's tomorrow. Okay, and that is really, in many senses, that is exactly what they were doing. They were living ahead of time. And as they are living and experiencing things in front of how time exists in this world, then they know tomorrow. Okay? Then they can prophesy. Then they can say, you know, this is what's going to happen. Now, there's a rabbi I listen to quite frequently. I haven't listened to him much in the recent years, but I used to listen to all of his works redundantly. So I had a mini disc player. Everybody know what that is? You got a little disc, and then they last 74 minutes. And I would put his lectures on the mini disc player and then carry them with me. And then, you know, working on the heavy equipment, I would listen to one of his lectures. And so sometimes I would only take one disc with me and listen to it every 72 or 74 minutes, whatever it was. So basically it's, you know, getting that data ingrained in yourself. Now what he said is where he lived in a tall high rise, and he could see people coming down the streets and moving toward an intersection. He said what he could do was he could stand there and sit there and watch, and he said he knew when an accident was going to happen. You know, this guy's flying, and they meet in the intersection, and there you go. You have an accident. He said, now, I didn't cause the accident, but I could see the accident before it was going to happen. Okay, so the reason to understand this is that the perspective is that of being in an elevated state. When you're in an elevated state, you see things that you wouldn't normally see, and you can see in many cases causation and things of that nature. So understanding to be able to look through these different realms is very important if you're going to have an association with spiritual vision. And so that being said, we have, again, Asaya as the wall. Now, in Jerusalem, they have a wall. And one of the things that is done in that particular wall is something that is technologically actually still very advanced, and that is they would take and they would build like a almost what we would call a turret. And a turret is actually something that could spin like the top of a tank. You know, it can go in 360 degrees. But this was made in 180 degrees so that what you could do, and it had a little slit about this wide in front of it. Okay, so you could see through the wall from that slit. But if you got into that little slit, then you could see, you know, 120 degrees or whatever. You wouldn't see the full 180, but you would have a clear vision of what's in front of you. But you're also in a protected area. So that turret comes out from the wall. You can look and see and etc. I was using it for a geographic marker on how to determine where the ashes of the red heifer would be sacrificed, where the red heifer would be sacrificed. And it's a lot of problems to figure that out, but that's another story. Okay, so this turret actually was not just for seeing, it was for defending the wall. Okay, and in that military aspect, it was a very important innovation in its day. But, you know, many things in natural warfare, you can find in the Bible, and you can find how they did it. Okay, so for example, you know, the wall is built all the way around the city of Jerusalem in antiquity, and there's a problem with that. You know, if you're going to be under siege, what is the problem? What do you have to deal with if you're under siege?
Food, water mainly.
Mainly water. Okay, so there was this guy in the Bible. You probably never heard of him before. His name was Hezekiah. He was a king of Israel, and he understood the military importance of what would happen if Jerusalem were to come under siege. So that means that what he did was make sure that there was water on the inside of the wall. Okay? And he just happened to dig this tunnel. Now, this tunnel is called the Hezekiah's Tunnel. Imagine that. So it was built where the miners started on both ends. And when we're talking about, you know, 700 years before Yeshua. You know, so when they are digging through here, they were just only slightly off by almost not even a degree. And so they intersected. There's one place in the wall where you just make a little turn and you're going into the second part of the tunnel. But that tunnel is filled with water, not filled to the top. You can walk through it. I've walked through it two or three times. And what happens is, you know, the water's to your knee, maybe your thigh or whatever, depending on the flow of the water. But it keeps the water inside of the wall. And so the wall is always intended for some sort of spiritual protection. But it's also, in this particular case, she says he's behind the wall. So that means that unless you find your advantage or your vantage point above the wall or on the top of the wall, you will never see over the wall. Okay? So now you can apply this to looking from Asaya in Tiberia. Okay? If you want to see into, not Berea, Yetzira. If you want to see into Yetzira, that means you basically have to elevate yourself spiritually. If you're sitting there and you don't have any experience in spirituality, spiritual vision, or anything, and you're saying, well, how come I don't see it? Well, that's because you're not on that spiritual level. Okay, so once you begin to experience spirituality on that new and that higher level, then you can see over the wall. Okay, and then obviously, once you see over the wall, you're looking into the realm of Yetzira. When you look into the realm of Yetzira, she says he's peeping through the lattice. So now you have the lattice. Lattice is not hard to figure out, right? What happens is, you know, you got all these crisscross slats and all that, and you just find you a little hole and you look through it. But anybody who has a lattice knows that really it turns out to be more of a trellis. Okay? So in other words, you plant a plant and you let it climb the lattice, and it can attach to the lattice, and it can climb the lattice, and it will interweave itself in and out of the lattice. One of the plants that's indigenous in Israel is called the bougainvillea. Everybody know what I'm talking about? It's a very pretty flower, and it blooms, and it's, you know, different colors of flowers, but it's very beautiful, and it's suited for dry environment. It can live in a drier environment, which is where the Song of Solomon is being cast, is in a place called Hebron. Okay, the patriarchs are buried there. It actually, the patriarchs are buried close to a place called Machpelah. Actually, they're buried in Machpelah, more or less. Everybody knows where Machpelah is, right? Machpelah is where Sarah was. Abraham bought the cave of Machpelah, and when he bought the cave of Machpelah, he buried his wife in Machpelah. Now, Machpelah means two caves, okay? So there's one above, and there's one below. And they say that something is laying there in the bottom part of the cave, and you can still see light in that particular cave. Light in the cave, and the light is the light of Adam's body that still illuminates that cave. There was a story about a young woman who was put in it, a young girl who was put in the cave, and they wanted to know what the cave looked like inside. The Jewish people did, and that particular aspect or entry into Machpelah is controlled by the Arabs. And so they did this rather stealthily. And what they found out was that when they put the girl inside, gave her a flashlight, etc., she said, I don't need the flashlight. It's light in here. And so she basically went, and she could tell that there was a luminous glow inside. And they were fascinated because they knew that the luminous glow was supposed to be from the body of Adam, okay? And that was back in the late 40s sometime. So that was a story I heard. Whether it is or isn't true, I cannot verify that. But the sources that gave it to me, I do trust. So the lattice has to do with this peering in and out of something, but it also gives us a sense of obscurity, or it closes off vision. And then you have also the plant or whatever might be growing on it in a trellis fashion. And so she's saying that, you know, he's looking through the or peeping through the lattice, and then she says he's gazing through the windows. Okay, so now you have three different forms of spiritual ocularity. Number one, you have, again, the wall. And in order to see over the wall, you have to do what? You have to climb the wall or get to the top of the wall, however that is. And then you have to look into the other realm. So if you were to look at this picture, this semicircle or the circle of Yetzirah that comes down into Isaiah, that's a picture of the wall. That's your wall right there. And so you would have to get above that to see into Yetzirah. And then once you look into Yetzirah, you're looking into a world of the lattice, where things are crisscrossed and, you know, vision is hard to find. And then if you get into Yetzirah, and you can imagine where that semicircle is from Beria, you know, this is the point when you would begin to see it through the window, okay? And so we all know easily enough that, you know, most windows are aware that you can go to the window, you can look outside, you can see what's going on. It's raining, it's not going to rain, it's getting dark outside, whatever the case might be. But again, now we're talking about differences in spiritual ocularity. So your ability to see deeper into the spiritual world will exist in the uppermost realms of Yetzirah, and then looking into Beria. And if you're in Beria, then you will see into those uppermost parts, okay? Now, in Exodus 25 and 9, I talked about this on Thursday. I will only give you a little bit of a hint about those things. I'm not going to repeat the lecture. I'll make it available online in a day or so. But in Exodus 25:9, the Mishkan, is the tabernacle, is being prepared for construction. The first verses of chapter 25, God is saying to Moshe, he said, tell him to make an offering so that I can build the Mishkan. It's very interesting when you read those verses, right? Because they start bringing gold and silver and all these different cloths and all of these different things. So they bring it. So that being said, they had to have some awareness of what they were preparing to build. Do you understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So they, okay, when you have Chokmah, Chokmah is the plethora of vision. It means that there's so much stuff that you cannot envision the true creation of what's about to happen. In this case, the Mishkan. So what do? They just bring gold, silver, all this different stuff, and all of those things. Now, I'm not going to try to tell you where all that came from. Excuse me. You know, they were gold mining, silver mining, copper mining, or whatever, out in the middle of the desert, right?
They had to bring it with them from Egypt, didn't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I have been in the copper mines of Solomon and been in the holes where they dug. And it was very interesting because the hole is only about this big around. And then they go down into the hole. And, you know, to look at that hole, you know how today we've got these augers that can go, and now they even have augers that'll go right through the rock and things like that. It looked like somebody augered a hole in the rock that's there to look for copper. I have somewhere a piece of copper from there. But that being said, they were supposed to have been given these things by the Egyptians as they were going. All right.
But consider in your imagination and look, how much material did they to build the temple as big as it was, or the tabernacle as big as it was? Look how much stuff they had to pack along with what they did. Look how, I mean, how it's almost amazing to think about how much, I mean, because we know gold weighs something. How much gold it took to do what they were doing in the tabernacle to build it, that they had packed that across the desert.
Now imagine Moses. Moshe, right? So God said, you're going to take the people from Egypt to the promised land. Okay, God. when do you want us to start? And he says, on the 15th of Nisan. Okay, Passover, right? So he says, that's when we're going to do it. Okay? Moses sat down, made a list of everything that he would need to take the children of Israel from Egypt to the promised land. And then he said, this is the food, this is the stuff we'll need, so we have to do logistics. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So we need so much beef, we need so much lamb, we need so much water, so that we got to carry all this with us when we go.
Flour, wheat for flour, I mean, phenomenal.
But then on top of that, you have to take all the stuff to make the build tabernacle.
Okay, so did he really do that?
No.
Mm-hmm. No, he didn't do it. He just got up and said, let's go. And you're going, wait a minute.
No.
We don't have water. Did they ever complain about not having water?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they sure did.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, we're done.
Did they ever complain about not having meat?
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
You see what I'm saying? So Moses didn't bring it all with him.
Yeah.
He said, you know, God is the God.
Provide.
It actually doesn't say that. Doesn't say provide. It says he will see. What does it mean that he would see? He would see the need I have when I get to that place, and he will see to it that I'll have what I need. Okay? That's what happened at the sacrifice of Isaac. All right. So once you begin to put together all of these things, it says that they brought all of these things to him, gold, silver, cloth, all the stuff that they might need. And then it said that, it reads in 25 and 9, God said, make sure you make it after the pattern that I'm showing you, okay? And then in verse 40 of 25, it says, make sure you make it according to the pattern that I am showing you on the mountain. Okay, now, yeah, there was a mountain, but what you need to truly understand is to spiritualize the text enough that you understand that Moshe wasn't just going up a mountain. He was going into the levels of the spiritual world. So he would ascend out of Isaiah, go through Yetzirah, and go all the way at least to Berea. I think he was going higher, but at least for the conversation at present, you can see that he was moving up through the spiritual worlds. And so if you said that, and you said, okay, where's the mountain? He would have to go into Berea. And this whole process perfectly describes what he had to do in order to see how to build the Mishkan, okay, or the tabernacle, okay? And then it talks about the fact that there are two men, and this is in Shemot, or Exodus chapter 31, and the two men that were going to construct the Mishkan had, it says, Chokmah, Bina, and Da'at. Okay, you probably, most of you probably don't know this, but it's Chokmah, but we always say Chokmah, but it should be spelled C-H. I never spell it C-H, I just spell it H, because you say Chokmah, but if you listen to the voice, Chokmah, okay, you say it in the enunciation. And then Bina is B-A, and then Da'at is a D, right? So you have a C-H, a B-A, and then you have a D. It's an acronym.
Kabod.
Kabod.
What?
Yeah.
It means hidden, doesn't it?
Huh?
It means hidden?
No, it means Chokmah, Bina, and Da'at.
Yeah, Kabod, but I mean, it doesn't have another...
No, it means that you've invested all three of those natures into your life. Now, you say, well, isn't there a Kabod movement today? Yeah. What are they based on? What are they built on? What is their ideology built on? Chokmah, Bina, and Da'at, okay? But it was long before the Kabod of today when the Kabod started, okay? So when you begin to see this, these men had Chokmah, Bina, and Da'at. And what it literally means is that they had the capacities for spiritual vision. And I believe that their spiritual vision would reach to the highest realm of Atzilut. Okay, or excuse me, Adam Kadmon. Why do I say Adam Kadmon? Adam Kadmon is where the blueprint lays. Okay? The blueprint for all of creation. So if you were able to go to the highest realm of spirituality, what you're going to see is a blueprint. Not just a blueprint like, you know, blue lines on a white paper or however you want to say all of that. But the point is, you know, there's a reason for them going into that particular realm and why they did there, because they had to be able to look at the blueprint for how it was constructed. Then once you have Chokmah and you get ready to begin to build, what do? Make a material list. Okay? So once you make a material list, you know, okay, I need gold, I need silver, I need all of this different stuff. And in doing all of that, then I can build the Mishkan. It's elusive. So you understand what I'm saying now? So these men had this capacity. And as I spoke on Thursday night, so did the one who built the temple for Solomon. Now, back to this idea of these men. They said these men had the capacity to weave the otiot. What it's talking about when it says otiot is the letters of light. In other words, the Hebrew alphabet. But the Hebrew alphabet was seen as letters of light. Now, I was going to bring it in here, but I don't know if it's in here or not. It's in Elizabeth's bedroom. The picture I gave you of the rose with, you know what I'm talking about. Okay, so what you can do with the letters is, of course, we all know how to spell, right? So you put the letters together, and as you put the letters together, then they form words, and then the form of word is a thing. And the thing is something that is going to exist or something that does exist. But they did something that is pretty much incomprehensible to most of... How can I say this? Normal life, okay? Now, if you can look at this picture, and you can see, just pass it around.
It's the virtuous woman, written in paper.
You see how it's a pattern of a rose?
So, those are all letters in there.
Okay, so that being said, there's an idea called tokening.
Tokening?
Yeah.
I barely can't see them, but these are all Hebrew letters.
Okay, a token is a way that an AI works. And I was amazed to find this out. But an AI does not always, and 99% of the time, it does not base itself on the words that it's going to put out. Okay? What it does is hunt for tokens. And so it hunts for tokens, but it can do it unbelievably fast. Okay? The token is a piece of a word. So if you wanted to go to a place, how do you spell place?
P-L-A-C-E.
Okay? And it might say P-L-A-C. Okay? And that's what it's doing. It's saying that's a place. So it speaks in this coded language where what it does is it breaks the language down into pieces and parts. It doesn't need to spell. And it gets rid of all of that stuff that we love so dearly. You love grammar?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you have to have this before that to say that it trash cans all of that stuff. Why? Because it's only looking at the keys of what it wants to say. And then because we are fixated on having proper grammar, then it grammatizes all the language and then it spits out something that's intelligible to you. But if you could function with an AI on the level of token, you can get rid of all of the superfluous things. And I do this sometimes because that's the way I read. You know how speed readers read? Okay, a speed reader gets rid of all the stuff that's and so it can go it gets rid of all that stuff. This is what these guys were doing with the Hebrew letters, and they were that said that they had the capacity to bend light, and so their capacity to bend light meant that they were looking at a spiritual source that was light. And they would take a letter and cause it to conform to what they needed it to be in the physical world. And they would use that to actually construct whatever it was that they were going to be constructing at that moment.
Oh, wow.
Okay, imagine for a moment, you know, just as I mentioned this the other night, just imagine the menorah. It said the menorah started out as a solid block of gold. Mm-hmm. And then it was hammered into a way that it actually became the menorah. And that's how they did it. Hammered. They didn't cut it. They didn't break it. All they did is hammered it. I don't have that technology.
I don't have the patience.
Exactly. Exactly. But these guys knew how to do this. So this is what they're doing. They form and shape all the letters into what they are in the spiritual world. And then after they do that, then they know how to... It's interesting because this world, this word Yetzirah means to form, or Yasha, which means the idea of taking a form and making it a material thing. Okay? It didn't say that God created Adam's body. It said he formed it out of the dust of the earth. You see what I'm saying? And that's this word Yetzirah that's in this middle place where you find the idea of being formed and shaped. Okay? So you understand the ideas then of this idea of peeping and gazing. First of all, you know, when you're peeping at something, everything looks like it is not real. It looks in some way like a bit of a phantom of what you're trying to see. Okay? So let's get your spiritual eyes tuned so you know how to go into Yetzirah. Yetzirah is again formed. So when you go into Yetzirah, you're not looking at solid figures like, you know, I can look at David. He's a solid person, I can tell. He's got holes in him in places that he doesn't realize he has holes in him. But your skin has to breathe, right? And all that kind of good stuff, okay? So you don't realize that, you know, that it's not solid matter, but to us it appears as solid matter. But now when you go into Yetzirah, you don't see the solid figure that we see in the state that we see right now. You see something a little bit more, and the best way I know to say it is it's either like a hologram, or it's translucent, or it's some vague impression that this is exactly what it is. But when you see it, you know what it is. It's not hard to understand that it's a person, a figure, whatever. Now, when you go into this world here of Yetzirah, you're going to encounter something a lot more than we do in this world. We don't really see them in the capacity that they exist. And I'm talking about the spiritual forces of the spiritual world that make this particular world work. Okay? And so generally they're called angels. But it's interesting, Paul didn't really call them angels, did he?
No.
He called them principalities and powers.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so there are particular forms and particular powers that make these things work. So everybody thinks that, you know, you say something like that and they think, well, it's an angel. And he's got so many wings. Some have more wings than others. And then some don't have wings. And, you know, they go through this whole business. And some of them look like fat little babies with...
Star Wars.
Some of them look like the calves, because they got calf's feet and they dance. Yeah. They're amber colored, look like fire.
Okay, they are fire. A seraph means a burning one. Mm-hmm. A seraphim. A seraph single means he's a burning one. So if you saw him, he would look like he was on fire. Okay, so when you go into that realm, that's what you're going to see. And as you're looking in that realm, it wouldn't be, you know, a super exaggeration for us to move into that realm and see things as they are. So, you know, there's going to be a building, there's going to be a whatever, and, you know, it will have that form, okay? So you see what I'm saying? You're not going to get lost. You know, where's the library? You want to go to the library. When you go, you'll see that the library is the library. But it's not a library in the sense of it being, you know, that hardcore physical thing that we look at and see every day we go to the library, okay? You know, the library is almost useless, right? I mean, if you're a book person, yeah, it's still important. But, you know, the more we get into electronics, the more books that we get on computer, etc., the less the value is of having a physical library. But the one thing that AI has not done is build a library.
Yeah.
They haven't.
Yeah. Ooh. Don't give them no ideas.
Oh, I've already created one.
Oh, no.
But it's not a library of all the superfluous whatever. It's a library that I want. You see what I'm saying? Right. With all the spiritual data. When I told you I was mapping the spiritual world, that's exactly what I was doing.
Rabbi, how do the two words Yetzirah and Yetzer correlate?
They don't. It's not really the same thing.
Okay.
Yetzer is associated with the idea of inclination.
Yeah.
There is some relation in a sense, because a form is intentional, okay? In Yetzirah, it is an intended thing. Now, I was going to do this a little bit later, but now let's go into Birya. Suppose that you're going into Birya. What are you going to see? Okay, now let me just break down the words first. Birya is the basis for creation. Bereshit, can you hear Birya? Bereshit is created or creation. And then Yetzirah is the formation. And so that then the formation means that it is forming the things that would be intended for creation in the realm of Messiah. Okay, everybody with me?
Can you repeat that again?
Sure. Okay, what you have in Birya is fundamentally an idea. Okay, so once you get the idea, then in Yetzirah, you make a form of it. You have, you know, a form. Many times, you know, if you're pouring concrete,
right,
you know what I'm saying? You're going to have to build a form. But you already see what you're making, but you know what you're making because you saw what you're building, getting ready to build in Birya, and then in Yetzirah, you have to make a form for it, and then once you make the form for it, you pour the concrete, and then you're in Isaiah.
Okay.
Okay?
Gotcha.
Now, the problem is, when you go into Birya, if you're looking in Yetzirah, then you look around, and if I were to look at David, he would appear... I could almost see through him as a translucent figure, okay? Maybe you might even see the organs or whatever. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Maybe you can. And it makes sense that you would. Why?
You still know it's David.
You would know it's David with no question. But at the same time, you see all the things that are functioning inside of him as well. Okay? But he's semi-translucent. You can almost see through him as well as that. You know, because all he is the form. And sometimes the form is a little different. Why? Make a coin. Make a penny. Oh, they're getting rid of that. So we need a nickel.
We need nickel.
Okay? So how would you do it? You have to reverse the form so that when you put the mint, put the material in there, then what happens? You know, what's a negative is a positive, etc. You see what I'm saying? So in that world, sometimes some of those things can be inverted in a way that it's difficult to understand. And this is why they tell you, if you go into that world, don't cut the plants. And basically what that literally means is, don't be trying to force things into a specific idea that you have in your head, because it's not on the level of plain literality. It's on a level of spirituality where it deals in forms and shapes.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Now go into the realm of Beria. What do you see when you're in Beria?
The blueprint to make it all.
No. Nope, the blueprint is in Asiah or Adam Kadmon.
It's where, guess where you gather the material.
No, you don't gather material there.
If it's creation.
It means creation. Okay, so go to Genesis 1. You don't have to go there. Genesis 1:1, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. But when it says, it literally says Berosh, right? The first word. You can break it down. And it says?
In the head.
In the head. That's Beria.
It's imagination.
Ah.
So creation is about imagination.
Okay. Imagining what?
The finished result.
Okay. Look at.
Oh my gosh.
You come to.
So much sense.
Yeah.
You come to. When we came and bought this particular lot, we wanted a. Buy this particular lot and put this house on the lot. But as we drove up to the property, the house wasn't here. So we had to
imagine
the house on the site.
Create it in your mind.
You create it in your mind from the very beginning. So this is the process now. Can you imagine, you know, in the Zohar, it talks about, you know, this process. And instead, a king went out and bought a piece of property. And the property that he bought, he was going to put his palace on. And he could see the palace sitting on the property. This is where I want my garage. This is where I want my house. This is where I want my work shed. This is where I want. You see what I'm saying? He's imagining everything as to where it would look. So, when you go into that world, you can't see anything. You envision it in your mind, so you know that the house goes here. Oh, and I need a driveway, and I need a road to get to my driveway, and you see what I'm saying?
So when it says in the beginning, I'm just trying to make sure I'm kind of grasping it. In the beginning, when it says, in beginning, he created, he was actually imagining it.
Yeah. Everything happened in his head first.
Very good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The bet means in, with, etc. So he created it with his head. Okay? But he saw it first in his head.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
And then, once he saw it in his head, Isaiah 46, 9 and 10, said, he sees the end from the beginning. Okay, so he envisioned it all in his head.
Yep.
And that's Beria.
Wow.
So you can now see, imagine we're taking a field trip, okay? You want to go on a field trip? We'll go in our little school bus. We'll go.
Magic school bus.
Yeah, I knew it.
What did she say? She said both said magic school bus.
That's where my mind was. The wheels on the bus go around.
And the children go up and
down.
Okay, so we're on our field trip. We go through Yetzirah and we see all these forms and stuff. But they look, in compared to this world, they look a little bit incomplete. But they're not incomplete. They're the perfect picture of the form. Okay? Why would you even imagine that you could see someone's internals?
What good would it do you? I mean, that makes so much sense, Rabbi.
You know, if you could see somebody's internals, then what would you know? You'd know they have a heart, you'd have the lungs, they have all this stuff. And if you could look into that world and see into the spiritual world and someone was sick,
you can fix it.
You can see it and you can say, no wonder you're not feeling so well today. You see what I'm saying? So actually, it's not that it is not full. It's actually fuller because now we can see through whatever it is so that we can look at the whole person. We're not just looking at the whole person. You know, they said that horse named Secretariat?
Yes.
They said the reason that horse, see, when they first started running that horse, they wouldn't let him loose. Mm-hmm. Why? But the jockey knew the horse had the capacity. And so when he finally got to the place, he said, okay, baby.
Time to go.
And he cut him loose. And he ran off so fast that the other horses couldn't catch up with him. You know why? His heart was so big. They said his heart weighed like 8 pounds or something like that. He had a supersized heart. You couldn't outrun his heart. None of the other horses could keep up because they didn't. So imagine that you're going to go buy a thoroughbred.
Don't X-ray his heart.
No. We just go into the realm of Yetzirah because it has to exist there before it comes into this world. And if you're looking at the heart of Secretariat, then what? Look at this boy.
This is my horse.
See that his heart? Yeah. And so once you look at something in that world, you see it in its completed, intended construction. But before you do that, in the realm of Berea, what do you do?
You have to imagine.
I want to make this horse with this gigantic heart. You see what I'm saying? You imagine it in your mind, and then once you imagine it, then you can see it in this place, but you don't really see it. You imagine it, and that's called in Hebrew, Dimyon Kodesh, a holy imagination. And when you have the holy imagination, you can see these things that are being prepared. So, back to your Berosh, in the mind of God, what does God do? Now listen, you think that just because He created the sun and the moon and the earth, that yay! Now they're studying, they've been doing this for some time, quantum physics.
Oh, yeah.
And beyond that, right? Mm-hmm. So when you understand that what they're trying to do is with quantum physics, what are they trying to do? They want to see what's in Berea. You see what I'm saying? They're not really literally trying to see physicality. And the problem with what they're trying to do in quantum mechanics and all of these things is too limiting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they're only concerned about the world of Isaiah.
Yes.
And if they get their head out of Isaiah and start looking at it on a construct of it being all of these different spiritual worlds interlaced with one another. Look, if that world, Yetzirah, is coming down into this world, can't you imagine that it is influencing this world? You know, when the prophets began to look into the spiritual world, they did not see physical things happening. They saw the forms.
That's why it says they fell into a trance.
They fell into a trance. They would go into a trance and they would see these things. Peter had it. He saw something happening with the tallit coming down with a bunch of different unclean animals in it. Now, did he see a literal tallit?
No.
Did he see a literal pig? Did he see a literal... You see what I'm saying? He didn't see literal, but in this world, he could see the formation or what is preparing to come into the physical world. So the whole process starts with, I'm gonna make a pancake. Oh, look! Take, make a pancake. Whatever.
I've learned and always been said, if you can see it from the realm of the spirit, you can have it.
It's just that. You see what I'm saying? He said, you can say to this mountain, be removed and cast into the sea. Well, all of the, how can we say this, money-grubbing preachers said, oh, and then that means all we have to do them is tell them that, you know, all they could have to do is just name it.
Claim it.
You have to see it.
But that makes so much sense, though, because with you being in the building trades also, there are visions to where we're given a blueprint of to what this architect or whoever it is,
yeah,
seen
in his mind.
In his mind, what we're trying to build.
Exactly. And then you'll have a blueprint. But right, it's interesting that the blueprint is not just a drawing, it's full line of instructions.
Exactly.
How deep you want to, how you want to build the footer? How do you want to build the columns?
Exactly.
How you want to build the, et cetera. It's all mapped out in there, but it's all data that tells you how to take this blueprint, which, by the way, somebody imagined something first.
Yep.
And they finished it in their head.
They had it completed in their head. We talked about the Empire State Building, you remember?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
59 feet.
Huh?
59 feet.
55 feet.
55 feet.
Of footer. A square block, who said it was like an acre or 2 acres?
2 acres, yeah.
Of concrete 59 feet deep.
That whole lot of,
you know, why did they do that?
Just for the weight of that building.
So it could sustain the wind.
So it could sustain any type of movement, because that building is built in a way that it does move. Went into the John Hancock building. Went into the John Hancock building in Chicago, and there was a line to the bathroom. We were at this party, and the boss he took us there because, you know, we had just finished this contract. And so he wanted to reward us. I'd never been in a building that high before. But, you know, one thing I knew, I had to go to the bathroom. And I needed to, you know, when you're working in construction, so you didn't have that idea there where you could do that. So, you know, the line opened up and moved and shifted. A couple guys came out of the bathroom, right? And I got shoved right up against the window. I'm like, oh my God, I thought it was going to fall all the way down. And then, you know, once you get to the window, you can go, this thing is moving. And then you slow down for a second. You said, I can feel it moving. Okay? So they did this because, you know, what they're going to do is they want to anchor this thing. And in the anchoring of all this idea, you know, somebody has to envision it. Well, first of all, somebody envisioned it, then he carries it to the architect, and the architect has to see the same vision. You see what I'm saying? So this is exactly what you have in Exodus 25 and 9. You know, they have to see the vision in order to build the Mishkan, but what they're building is not just a material tent. It's something that is being built to house the divine presence. And if you don't build it right, You see what I'm saying? It won't work. And then I shifted and told you, you know, somebody saw it different. It was the temple. Somebody saw it different. It was the second temple. Somebody else saw it different, and it's this temple. Okay? So once you start to understand these principles of spirituality, and you start to understand that each one of these realms represents a piece of creative process, but it also... If just set aside physical creation and start thinking about spirituality. Because if you look and you can go into the world of Beria, then you can imagine something in that realm, and then you can see its form in the next realm, and then you can materialize it in Messiah. So, David, start imagining $1 billion.
Quickly.
You get on the rocket ship.
You go find it.
Okay, can you see this process? It is complex. But if you just literally understand the vocabulary is all there is to it. If you understand creation, but then you have to understand that you're not going to just go up there. You know, I used to say all the time I wanted a red Lamborghini Countach. 5,000. And, you know, the only way for you to be able to say that is to be able to imagine it first, right? You know. 9/11. I went into my church in Indiana, and not my church, but two church in Indiana. And you know, in my mind's eye, I knew that the pastor was a woman pastor. I knew that she always wanted a Cadillac, and I thought, And I walked in one day, and it was almost as if they had a Thunderbird. And nice car, very nice car. But I could see almost as if that Thunderbird were a Cadillac. And so I walked into the church, and I started to say something. She said, "Do you see it?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "What do you see?" I said, "It's a red and white Cadillac." And she said, "Okay." She knew I saw exactly what she was imagining.
Oh.
She wanted the same thing. You know, if you looked at the Thunderbird back then, it had that like vinyl top, you know what I mean? And then the rest of it was red. She wanted a Cadillac instead of a Thunderbird. Now, this being said, the whole point is that the thing that I showed you last week or a week or two ago was this image right here. Okay, and then if you look at this image, you see that in each one of them, there is a chain that actually is going down. In this image, there is no chain. What is there?
Light.
Light, okay. And the light is actually what we call Shefa. Okay. Shefa is actually the light that flows down. But one of the beautiful things is that when the Shefa comes down out of these worlds, as it's coming down out of the worlds, it possesses all of this stuff in it, in an encoded way. And then when you get down here, Shefa turns into a word called Hashpa'ah, which means bestowal, or you get it. You're given this idea. So now the whole point behind seeing the window or seeing through the window is to see into this realm Beria and not just seeing the form of something in this, but to spiritually understand which world you're in when you have a particular vision. You understand what I'm saying? Because if you go into the realm of Yetzirah, and you see somebody's intestines,
I'd be like, oh, cool.
Why? Chances are there's something that you're being shown for a particular reason. How does word of knowledge work?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? That's how a word of knowledge works. It works on the level of Yetzirah. Now, there's another word in Corinthians. What is it? A word of
wisdom.
Wisdom. Where does the word of wisdom come from? Yeah, Berea, okay? Because then you can imagine something that seems impossible in the particular place, okay? And again, once we begin to start to understand these aspects of the spiritual world, when you start to see into the spiritual world, you start to be able to identify where you're at and what you're seeing. And then if you identify where you're at, you know the coordination that you will find in this realm here below. Okay? In the realm. Because everything is made to come down into this world for right now. But what I showed you last week is these are all doing what?
They're moving.
So this is moving up. This is moving up. This is moving down. It would almost look like this world.
Like a Ferris wheel.
Yeah. But it would almost look like this world. Which world is this?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, it would... pretty cool. I can see through the paper, right?
Mm-hmm. Colored.
Can you see through the paper? Okay, so you see everything is condensing and going to come to union where? Huh?
In Adam
Kadmon. No, it's not going to go up. Adam Kadmon is coming down.
It's gonna come down. It's gonna be a
dome
when it gets done.
It won't just be what you're saying is right, but at the same time, it won't be just a dome Kadmon.
It'd be all of them exactly.
Everything is gonna be condensed and coalesced into one realm.
Yeah, and that's gonna be a dome Kadmon, but it's gotta have everything in it.
It's on Adam. How would you say that? Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Okay. So when you start to see that this is the purpose of literally, spiritually, looking into the spiritual world. We're not just looking into spiritual world like sightseeing. Oh, did you see that? That's pretty cool, didn't it? What in the world was that? Yeah. Let's make this thing. It's got long legs and a long neck.
A giraffe.
You know, who in the world would have ever come up with a giraffe? You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
Yeah, giraffe in Hebrew.
We wanted it to be something good for us.
Yeah. So, my point here is that the difference between the wall, the lattice, and the window is perspective. So she's saying, my lover is behind the wall. Okay, in order to get to see him, we have to elevate above the level of materialistic physicality. And then we have to move into, if we just want to get, now look at, you know, you could have him looking at us through the lattice. But that's not what she's saying. What is she saying? Go back
she's
to.
She's looking at him through the lattice.
She's looking at him through the lattice. And so stand a person up in front of a lattice. And look at them. What do you see?
You don't get the whole picture.
Right.
You know it's there, you just can't fully see.
Look at.
Go close to the hole so you can see
the
whole thing.
You can do exactly that. But look at, when you move it back, and let's make it the back of the room, okay? Somebody standing behind a piece of lattice in the back of the room. What can you tell?
It's Is there somebody standing there?
You can tell that it's a person there. You see what I'm saying? Because you can see the
formation.
It's formation. You see the form of that person. Now, if you want to see what his face looks like,
you have to get closer.
You can still look at the head area and tell that, you know, it's got these features, et cetera, et cetera. They had this game at church one time, and what they did is put your girlfriend or boyfriend behind the this cardboard box, and the only thing that you could see through that was their nose.
I got mine right.
And so they wanted you to kiss. Yeah, I said, that's not the girl I came with. So, you know, but you understand, all you could tell of the feature was her nose, okay? So, back to the lattice. Now, apply this. Now, here we got to get at the bottom. We got to get over the wall. Then we have to look through the lattice. And so, can you see the idea of the form? Okay, looking through the whole lattice, you can see the form and the outline of that person, but you know that it's a person. Now, if you get close,
when you walk up all the way though to the lattice, you get up, stick your nose in the lattice, it becomes a window. So you move to the other realm.
It's miniature windows all put together, basically, is what it is. Okay? And so this is to get your idea of how you understand, you know, what you're going to see through as you're looking through the particular pieces.
It makes you want more.
And that's literally the intent of the whole idea. And then once you want to get to the realm of Beria, then what do you see? You have to imagine what you see. Questions, comments?
That's more than the young doctor.